second case this morning. It's number 20-2633, Argueta Anariba, the Director of Hudson County Correction Center, Ms. Williams and Mr. Mercado Santana. Ms. Williams?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Yes, good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors, and please the court. My name is Alyssa Williams, and I represent pro bono the petitioner, Mr. Angel Argueta Anariba. I would like to request 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Sure, that's fine.
Your Honors, the questions of law before this court can be separated generally into two overarching issues. First is the district court's error in denying reopening of the habeas petition, where Mr. Argueta's claims regarding unconstitutionally prolonged detention have been unadjudicated under what is now 6 years and counting.
So the first question is, did the district court err by concluding it had didn't have jurisdiction to consider Mr. Argueta's motion to reopen? And your response to that is, yes, it did, but why?
Correct, Your Honor, for two reasons. That first is that the district court failed to recognize that Mr. Argueta was bringing the same substantive claim for relief, a prolonged detention claim under the Fifth Amendment Due Process Clause. And second, that the district court had properly acquired jurisdiction at the time of filing of the initial habeas, and that the Supreme Court's precedent in Endo and Padilla tell us that jurisdiction is not later lost by the government's decision to transfer a petitioner out of the district.
Is Mr. Argueta still detained in Louisiana?
He is in Louisiana, Your Honor. He has again been transferred and is again now over has had more than the 12 transfers mentioned in our brief. He's since the last filing has been moved to a new location in Pine Prairie, Louisiana.
Yeah, I mean, my understanding is he's had like 14 transfers or so over X number of years. Have you filed any habeas petitions in Louisiana?
No, Your Honor. And that is because the same due process claims that were presented in the District of New Jersey and for which the District of New Jersey acquired jurisdiction have not been adjudicated on the merits. And the Supreme Court tells us that therefore the District of New Jersey is the proper court to now consider, hear those claims, and give Mr. Argueta his day in court on the substantive due process claims.
Right. I understand, Judge Nuriaki, you have questions. My fault, I'm sorry.
No, I apologize. The briefing that was submitted in connection with the motion to reopen addressed different issues than the briefing that was addressed in the original petition, didn't it? It only talked about section 1231 and the COVID issues that became more apparent in the Louisiana detention. Isn't that right?
I think that has to be looked at in context, Your Honor. And if I may just explain a little what I mean there, is that the claims for relief, as the respondent concedes in their briefing as well, the initial habeas petition raised two legal claims. First was under the due process clause, whether Mr. Argueta's detention had become unreasonably prolonged. And then the second, whether or not immediate release was the appropriate remedy. So that has always been the issue. What we had to address when we were back with the motion to reopen is something that came up in the district court's original decision on the habeas in October of 2019, which is that the statute that the immigration authorities were relying on had changed from 8 U.S.C. 1226 to 8 U.S.C. 1231. And we were just discussing different implications of that statute.
But why isn't that akin to a new petition with new grounds being asserted?
Because, Your Honor, this court's case law tells us that it is the same due process analysis that is put into place when there are these Fifth Amendment claims of prolonged detention, regardless of whether it's under 1231 or 1226. The issue at the time of the October decision, Your Honor, was just a question of whether or not there was there needed to be an additional 90 days before under 1231 it would be right. But there was no contention that it's still a due process claim. And in fact, I point, Your Honor, to Leslie versus Attorney General of the Third Circuit, where there was very similar set of facts. A petitioner who had been detained for 4 years, certainly less than the 6 years we're facing here, but in that case, he was going back and forth between section 1226 and 1231. And it was not an issue for this court in order to make its decision, which ultimately in that case, the decision was to order immediate release be granted. So again—
Okay, I appreciate that. That was very helpful, thank you. But in this case, I guess what I'm trying to understand is you said that filing a petition in Louisiana where he is currently housed would not be appropriate because his claims had not yet been adjudicated in New Jersey. But the judge in New Jersey did deny the original petition. At what point are those claims adjudicated such that you think it would be appropriate to then file in the place where he actually is and where there is a person who can grant the relief being requested?
Sure, Your Honor, I would respond with 2 points. First is certainly what the case law and the legal requirements tell us, and then also sort of the practical implications of sort of following and chasing after the multiple transfers. But as to the first question, the district court made very clear in its decision, which is in the joint appendix one before this court, that its decision in October of 2019 was dismissed without prejudice, and that it was essentially an issue of ripeness, which the case law tells us is not a decision on the merits. That's a procedural determination. And the court simply said, again, at this time, it was dismissing without prejudice the request for immediate release. And it was sort of further explaining the reason for its decision was that despite the habeas petition having been sitting with the court for 7 months, now the statute of detention had changed slightly, and the court felt it was not quite yet ripe, but in 90 days it would be and the parties should come back. And this is very clear under the case law that that's not a substantive decision on whether or not there's a violation of Mr. Argueta's due process rights for his 6 years in immigration detention. That was just simply a procedural decision. And the Supreme Court in Gonzalez versus Crosby sets forth very clearly that motions to reopen are important procedural safeguards in habeas cases. So certainly motions to reopen are used throughout civil procedure, but they are especially important in the habeas context. And in Gonzalez, the court gives us some confines to look at, right? It gives us a little bit of structure. And that is where we get this proposition that a motion to reopen is the proper procedural vehicle if the initial habeas decision was not decided on the merits, and then secondarily, if the petitioner continues to bring the same substantive legal claims. And we meet both of those requirements here, which is why a motion to reopen was the proper vehicle.
Let me ask you this, Ms. Williams, from a practical perspective, and I think this would be of concern to all district court judges. So you have Judge Vasquez in New Jersey. How is he supposed to determine the conditions of confinement in a prison in Louisiana?
Thank you, Your Honor. I think that's a very important distinction and part of the district court's error in this case. So we know what we're referring to here are the additional factors given the COVID pandemic that right. Mr. Argueta has now been detained during COVID.
That are unique to his place of confinement, correct?
That is not true, Your Honor. And this is where I would make a very important distinction that has sort of started, has been also distinguished in the district courts. There are two ways to bring these COVID claims, if I may call it as such. The court makes clear that, of course, as Guerrero and as set forth by this court in Guerrero Sanchez, as part of a prolonged detention claim, one of the factors is you look at conditions of confinement. And so this is what we're doing in this case. We're saying, and we're saying there are exceptional circumstances and immediate release is warranted. The other way they can come up, and we see this, is that for people who cannot bring prolonged detention claims, maybe they're newly detained, you know, they haven't met this 6 month threshold that the Supreme Court tells us about, they can still raise COVID concerns under separate due process claims, saying that because of their medical vulnerabilities, the Fifth Amendment says that their conditions confinement are now punitive. So this is a very separate basis that the district courts have recognized. It's the right, Your Honor, to be free from deliberate indifference to their serious medical needs. And the district courts recognize that as its own standalone Fifth Amendment claim.
Isn't that a very factually driven analysis based on where the person is being held?
That claim would be, Your Honor, because you're looking at the conditions in that facility. What we are bringing about here, Your Honor, we're simply pointing out that Mr. Argueta has very serious medical issues that are documented, and the documents were under seal with the district court. And that in light of the COVID-19 pandemic, which is international, which is across the world, which is not—
Has Mr. Argueta been vaccinated?
I don't have that knowledge, Your Honor. And it certainly was not in the before the district court as well. But this is to your point, Your Honor, that the COVID claims were just additional facts. We were not asking the court to look at what is the facility here doing. We were just saying, from the beginning, asked for immediate release, and that is still our claim here in this case, Your Honors, and that we wanted to bring to the court's attention, sort of to document in the record, that we are also bringing these claims during the COVID-19 pandemic, where Mr. Argueta has vulnerabilities, and it supports our reasoning that he should be immediately released. We're not separately challenging what any particular facility was doing or not doing in regards to his confinement. We're still arguing that his detention by immigration authorities is prolonged.
Well, what if we're with you halfway? In other words, what would happen if we decide, okay, Judge Vasquez, you do have jurisdiction? What happens then?
I think that's the appropriate response under the case law, certainly, Your Honor.
And but then how does Judge Vasquez get to the ultimate question?
The ultimate
question with this person being in Louisiana.
The ultimate question, Your Honor, is not determined by where Mr. Argueta is located. The ultimate question is, has his detention become unconstitutionally prolonged under the four factors of DIAP? The four factors set forth by this court in DIAP, as this court is aware, first is, what is the length of detention? That's the number one most important factor for the court.
But as a practical matter, you say it doesn't matter where he is. I mean, the respondent in this case is the director of the Hudson County Correctional Facility. That person can't, Judge Vasquez can't direct that person to do anything. There's no one in the judge's jurisdiction whom he can direct to give the relief that you're seeking. So as a practical matter, I'm trying to understand how this works.
Sure, Your Honor, I would argue that that position is actually not correct under the case law, that the Supreme Court tells us how to deal with this, starting back from the Endo decision. If we look at Endo—
But in the Endo decision, there was someone, and the court specifically said that the Secretary of War was under that court's jurisdiction and could give the relief that was being requested, even though the person had moved to Utah or Arizona, right?
And then fast forward to Padilla, where the Supreme Court says that the Attorney General is typically not the proper defendant in an immigration habeas case. So you don't have anybody in New Jersey that can deal with Louisiana. The Attorney General looks like it may not be the proper defendant. So who is?
Yes,
who can deal with the, who can, has jurisdiction to order Mr. Anariba's release?
Yes, Your Honor, if I can back up, and I think this is important to parse out what Padilla said, how it relates to Endo, and to answer Judge Noriega's question as well, is how can
right we ahead.
Issue an order that will be effective in, you know, where to whomever is currently holding Mr. Argueta, and even if he gets transferred again. So I think we need to very carefully start with the Supreme Court's decision in Padilla and look at the context, because the respondent does rely on this case quite heavily through its brief. Padilla repeatedly throughout the court's decision makes clear that it's referring to the proper party to be named at the time of filing. The court was concerned with when does the district court acquire jurisdiction. Remember, in Padilla, the case was filed in the Southern District of New York when the petitioner had already left that jurisdiction. So very different set of circumstances here. And the Supreme Court made clear that we are talking about the warden of the facility has to be named at the time of filing and that that person must be in the court's jurisdiction. And that is how the district court acquires jurisdiction. And in fact, we need to read Padilla and Endo together. And that is not something we should just assume. That's something that the Padilla court actually tells us. The Padilla court, Your Honors, reminds us that Padilla stands for the important but limited proposition that once the district court acquired jurisdiction, the removal of the person from that court's jurisdiction does not cause the court to lose the ability to issue a writ.
Let's assume that this, the judge was incorrect here, that Judge Vasquez had jurisdiction. Now the case comes back to Judge Vasquez. Wouldn't it appear that there are two options? Either try to find somebody in New Jersey who might have the ability to order a release or whatever, if that were ultimately the case, or simply transfer the case to Louisiana. Wouldn't that second option be the most pragmatic?
Your Honor, to answer that last question first, would that be the most pragmatic? I would say no, because for multiple reasons. First is, what if we get to Louisiana and then the government has decided they want to move him again to Mississippi or again to Texas?
Well, I mean, you can do, I think, to some extent, what was done in New York is, and it wasn't heeded, maybe it wasn't noticed, but don't move him. An order of the court, he stays where he is, then transfer the habeas action to Louisiana and let the courts in Louisiana deal with it.
Well, Your Honor, as a practical matter, the case has been with the district court, very substantive briefing, a more than 20-page habeas, extensive facts, documents submitted under seal. That's where pro bono counsel has been. If we are going to issue a pause in one particular place, it makes the most practical sense to do that in New Jersey, remand it. Certainly the court could issue an order for Mr. Arguette to be brought back to New Jersey and the court could stay there. And I would offer, Your Honor, also that that this is not something necessarily unique to this case. A very Griffith versus Ebert, which is cited in our brief, was a case that started in the Middle District of Pennsylvania, went up to the Third Circuit. The Third Circuit found that in a different factual context, but Third Circuit had found that jurisdiction was proper, but because the person had moved, in the interest of justice, it would send it to Minnesota. The case then had to go through Minnesota, went up to the Fifth Circuit, and the Fifth Circuit said, no, it needed to go back under this long line of case law and be heard in the Middle District of Pennsylvania where jurisdiction had properly started. And so now years later, this person is still detained, having the case heard and awaiting his day in court. And that's something we need to avoid here. As Your Honors, I believe, can follow from the Supreme Court case law, is that jurisdiction was proper in the District of New Jersey. And the court has said that under the court's habeas powers, if the court acquired jurisdiction and has, the court can then issue any orders in accordance with that writ, and then we will find any appropriate official who can make effective the orders of the court. But certainly the claims are ripe for review. The district court has the power to issue this order and it is properly before the District of New Jersey.
Thank you. We'll get you back on rebuttal and hear from your opposing counsel. Mr. Mercado Santana.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. My name is Victor Mercado and I represent the United States.
Can I just back questions at the outset? Why was Mr. Arguette transferred to Louisiana?
I don't know why he was transferred to Louisiana. I would believe that would have to do with.
Oftentimes you transfer to Louisiana when they're getting ready to ship somebody out, and the flights often leave from Louisiana. So at least that's been my experience in the past. But at this point, it looks like there's 14 transfers between five different ICE facilities in four different states. Is that how the system works?
Well, I am honestly not in the position to explain ICE's decision for transfer or decisions related to housing needs or whether this was related to a possible removal that could not happen. I'm not in a position to make those representations, but to the extent that those, sorry?
No, go ahead. You go finish your thought.
But to the extent that those transfers relate to the habeas petitions, the issue here is that at the moment that Mr. Argueta had a claim under, like had a possible claim under 1231, that happened when he was, after the district court in New Jersey had already disposed of his habeas petition, and when he was housed in a detention facility in Louisiana, his COVID claim arose out of a facility in Louisiana and out of conditions in a facility in Louisiana, and any effect of a Second Circuit stay on the detention authority and the ability for the government to detain him arose when he was detained at a facility in Louisiana.
So let me ask you this, just from a practical perspective, Mr. Mercado, are you suggesting that every time somebody moves, they have to refile the habeas petition in the jurisdiction where they're being held?
No.
So what are you suggesting?
Okay, what I'm suggesting here is if he had been transferred while his habeas petition was still pending, the case law is clear that the District of New Jersey would have retained jurisdiction over the transfer. So these concerns about transfers would not have affected the district court's authority to entertain the habeas so long as the habeas was open. This is a habeas that was already decided by the district court, and it was already closed by the district court. And
what's your response to the argument that we heard that this was not a habeas petition that was decided on the merits? It was decided on a lack of ripeness, and that the underlying issues, whether it be under Section 1226 or Section 1231, were the unconstitutionally prolonged conditions without a hearing and a violation of Fifth Amendment due process. So the argument, as I understand appellant is making, is wasn't decided on the merits. It was decided on ripeness issues, and the judge invited them to come back. So it wasn't decided, and that the issues are the same. So take those each and tell me what your response is, please.
Well, in that regard, what I would say is that to the extent that the judge had discretion to reopen a previously closed habeas petition, given the facts here, there was no abuse on his discretion to decline to reopen when there were factors such as he exercising jurisdiction over a detention facility that fell beyond the borders of his jurisdiction. So and also the fact that the detention related claims relate to facts that.
But the judge didn't say he was exercising his discretion. And, you know, saying I have jurisdiction and I'm going to transfer. The judge said, I don't have jurisdiction. So what is the basis for your argument that the judge had discretion in what he was doing? It seemed to me the judge was saying, I don't have a choice. I don't have jurisdiction.
And that's exactly what his page and a half work decision stated.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you, Your Honor.
And that's exactly what his page and a half order stated. Or opinion stated, I don't have jurisdiction.
But when I talk about abuse of discretion, I'm talking about the review of the Center for Review for a motion to the denial of a motion to reopen. But and ultimately, it is, I mean, based on the facts here, these are new claims that arose in a facility that was outside of the district court's decision, district court's jurisdiction. So the district court wouldn't have had jurisdiction over the claim if it was filed initially. So the district court properly declined to exercise its jurisdiction over claims that
As I understand Ms. Williams' argument, the threshold issue, the real issue is the prolonged detention, the many, many years without a hearing. The Judge Vasquez is in a position, assuming he has jurisdiction, to rule on the merits on that claim, right? Notwithstanding the COVID issues.
If he had jurisdiction.
That's what I'm saying. If he had jurisdiction, right?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have any authority that says that a habeas petition properly filed at the outset and later transfer can defeat the court's jurisdiction? So if it's properly filed in New Jersey and he's later transferred to Louisiana, can that defeat the District of New Jersey's jurisdiction?
No, the government's position is that if it was transferred while the habeas petition was open, then the transfer would not defeat jurisdiction. The problem here is that the habeas was already decided and closed by the time that the new claims have arisen.
Is it your position that the habeas petition was closed, was decided on the merits? I asked that as that was a terrible question. Is it your position that the habeas petition was decided on the merits?
I thought it was a good question. It deserves an answer.
I would say that at that point what the court had found was that the detention authority had changed, and therefore there was the authority under there was no the new claim was not ready for consideration. So yes, it wasn't considered on the merits to the extent that a 1226 claim was raised.
But you keep going back to the new claims. Ms. Williams is arguing that threshold claim is the prolonged detention. So you're not telling us that Judge Vasquez ruled on that, are you?
No.
Okay, so it was not decided on the merits.
No.
Is that correct?
Yeah, I would agree that it wasn't decided on the merits. Go ahead.
And that's the same claim that was raised in the petition to reopen, the prolonged detention, as they would say, unconstitutionally prolonged detention, right?
Well, the claim that was originally raised was a challenge to 1226 detention. That was dismissed by the court because there was the detention authority switched to 1231.
But wasn't this detention really under 1226C?
At what point, Your Honor?
Well, it was a mandatory detention because of the particular crime that was committed, right?
Yes. So it was 1226 when he filed the original habeas petition. At the time that the district court dismissed the habeas, it was dismissed because detention authority had transferred to 1231. And after he was transferred and after the district court made the decision, the Second Circuit had issued a stay of removal, and that under Fifth Circuit case law the Fifth Circuit hasn't decided whether that detention authority will be 1226 or 1231 when the stay is in place.
But so, I'm just trying to think practically here.
Mm-hmm.
If you're the government and you have the type of crime that was committed here, for which the person I think got 96 months, why not just say, look, if the confinement more than 6 months, in this case over 6 years, is unreasonable, and it's under 1226C, all that the detainee gets is an individualized bond hearing. And the government then has a chance to put forth clear and convincing evidence that continued detention is necessary. And it would look like you have a really good case to make that. Why not just work backwards and say, no matter what happens, we still win? Instead of fighting over jurisdiction, instead of fighting over whether it's not 1226C, but instead of 1231, why not just get to the bottom line?
Well, that that could happen if a proper habeas was filed in the Western District of Louisiana and where the parties could
make those claims. But Ms. Williams is saying that a proper habeas was filed in the District of New Jersey, and that's where it should come back to. Again, the court still has two options. It could try to deal with it, or to confine somebody that can, well, maybe three options. Maybe order that the petitioner be brought back to New Jersey. Maybe see if there's somebody in New Jersey that could enforce an order if there were to be a release, or simply just to say, I hereby transfer the matter to Louisiana. And my guess is it likely would be the third option. You might get what you're looking for, but by a different route.
And well, I think
the problem that judges have with what you're suggesting here is that if we rule in your favor, the government can continually defeat jurisdiction simply by transferring the petitioner all around. And in this case, I don't think you necessarily want the type of press attention to somebody who's been given 14 different transfers over 6 years in four states and X number of facilities.
Without a hearing.
Without a hearing.
Well, I would.
It doesn't look good.
Well, I understand that, yeah, the facts are not favorable for the government. I would, like, that is true, but.
Wouldn't it just create a mess, quite frankly, in terms of folks filing, you know, habeas petitions as soon as they arrive in a facility because they might be transferred in a month? And you'd be shooting at moving targets here all the time. Is that what the government wants?
No. What the government is trying to explain here is, look, if a person files a habeas and the person gets transferred, the law is clear that the transfers in those scenarios don't defeat jurisdiction. The concern here is a person filing a habeas, that habeas being closed, then the person being transferred to another jurisdiction, and then from that other jurisdiction, that person tries to get the first habeas court to reopen the case and decide issues that happened outside of that habeas court jurisdiction. That's the concern here.
But the transfer concern is a legitimate. These aren't issues that happened outside, because again, the threshold issue is the length, a 4+ year detention with no hearing.
Yes, but
go ahead.
No, go ahead, Your Honor.
No, please answer Judge Restrepo.
Oh, no, the point I was going to make about that is that the claims that are being raised here, I mean, there's a detention claim, and there is a claim about COVID, those claims, especially the COVID claim, happened outside of the District of New Jersey, arises outside of the District of New Jersey. If Your Honor may have the question.
I just wanted to make sure that I understand. So there's no dispute that Mr. Argueta has been in detention for more than 4 years, I think it's closer to six, without a hearing on the length of his detention. Is that right?
If I recall properly from the record, I will have to verify this, but I believe that he may have received some hearings. I cannot
he had a hearing, but it was years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't a hearing pursuant to a recent district court order. That is correct.
Okay. And are you saying the only way he can get such a hearing is to have a habeas petition decided?
At this moment, that's my understanding.
Okay. So isn't it important that we find a way for him to, I'm not saying that he's going to be released, but to have a hearing where someone who can look at the facts and determine whether he should be released on bond, whether he's a candidate for that or isn't. Isn't it important that someone has jurisdiction? And if he's a moving target, it seems like you're making it very difficult for anyone to have jurisdiction over him.
Well, the court proposal that the case be transferred to Louisiana would get us to the court with the proper jurisdiction. The other avenue there will be for the petitioner to file the claim in the Western District of Louisiana, but there are ways for him to hear the claim. It's just that in our view, the District of New Jersey it's not at this point the proper venue.
Any further questions of my colleagues?
No.
No, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. McConnell. Ms. Williams?
Can I
just start off by just, again, working backwards with you? There was in, I guess, 2017 or so, an IJ in the Southern District of New York denied Mr. Argueta's request for a bond because he was a flight risk and a danger to the community. What would possibly change that?
Your Honor, if I can make clear that first, the habeas was filed in 2015 in the Southern District of New York, and the Southern District ordered that a bond hearing be heard, that the detention was unconstitutional.
Right.
And at the hearing, the immigration judge at that time determined that there was only at the time he had filed, he had been in for about a year. And so weighing the factors, he found the determination of flight risk.
Well, in 17, I thought he was immediately transferred in December of 14 to ICE custody after he served his 96-month sentence. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So, but my point here is, given the particularly violent nature of the 2007 offense for which he got the 96-month sentence, what makes you think that a court's going to say somehow he's been rehabilitated, that he can be safely released into the community when, he's been determined to be a flight risk and a danger to that community?
2 points to that, Your Honor. First, with that, this court in NGO versus INS made very clear that to presume dangerousness to the community and risk of flight based solely on a petitioner's past record does not satisfy due process. Court went on to say due process is not satisfied by rubber stamp denials based on temporally distant offenses. And again, what the court reminds us is that we are not looking here at someone's criminal confinement. We're talking about civil detention. And that is why in Herman Santos and Diop, the court made very clear.
But what all you get under Germán Santos is a bond hearing. And my question to you is, the practical question is, let's assume you get that. How do you win in dispelling the notion that this person might be a flight risk or a danger to the community?
Well, Your Honor, first, what I would refer back to is, I think Your Honor talks about Mr. Argueta's 96-month sentence. And I would point, Your Honor, to the Third Circuit case of Leslie, which arose here, where that person had a 168-month sentence and ultimately was granted through this court's decision because of how the length of detention, he was entitled eventually to immediate release and not even a bond hearing.
But that was a very, very, very different set of facts in Leslie, and also it related to what was determined to be, in effect, a structural issue. Let's assume you get everything. You got jurisdiction, you get your bond hearing. My question to you is, practically, how do you dispel the notion that was before the IJ in 2017 in the Southern District of New York that this person isn't going to get out for one or two or both reasons, flight risk and danger to the community?
First, Your Honor, we are very prepared for if this case goes back, we are ready to have Mr. Argueta's day in court. And certainly over the years, we've been working extensively. He has worked very closely with a social worker in our office. He's completed many programs through his facility. He's been in contact with his psychologist and has been under necessary appropriate medication. So we certainly have plenty of evidence that we are ready and prepared to submit when Mr. Argueta gets his day in court.
But even right today, the primary evidence would be COVID conditions, and they may be significantly not good in Louisiana or wherever Mr. Argueta will be. But we don't know if he's been vaccinated. We don't know if there's been a significant diminution in the number of COVID cases in the facility that he is. So there's a whole lot of things that we don't know. And yet always hanging out there is, if I were to release this person, I would feel uncomfortable, at least according to some IJs, and certainly the one that did previously rule, that this person would be a flight risk and a danger to the community because of the particularly violent crime he committed.
If I may, Your Honor, again, that is precisely why remand is appropriate, because the factual record has not yet been developed and none of these issues have been addressed. And of course, that's something that will be appropriately considered by the immigration court. And so it's just not something that the court here under the case law needs to concern himself with. And that's also exactly why, when we're thinking through these constitutional civil prolonged detention cases, Mr. Argueta has already served his time in the criminal sentence. The criminal court found it sufficient that by this point he would be out in the community. So we're now just talking about someone's civil detention. At what point after 6 years is that unconstitutionally prolonged, and to develop the facts? But if I may, Your Honor, what we need to focus on is that—
But do you agree that the only thing that he gets is a bond hearing if you win?
We are asking, in light of this court's case law, that also the district court consider and hear the arguments in support of a request for immediate release, to allow us to make those arguments and be heard by the district court. Again, because as this court has found in other cases where detention has risen to 4 years, that's an appropriate form of relief. And we were also asking for a hearing on that, Your Honor. And
I'll give you one more minute. I've stepped all over your time. Go ahead.
Not at all. Thank you, Your Honors. It just that the district court made an error of law in this case and failing to recognize that it had jurisdiction. And where this error of law occurred, this court must vacate the decision of the district court. I'd ask Your Honors to look back at the record very carefully, at the habeas petition, at the transcript of the proceedings at document 14 in our opening briefs and reply briefs. And it is very clear that these COVID facts are not any additional claims, and that Mr. Argueta is simply bringing forth his claim that his civil detention has become unconstitutionally prolonged. Your Honors, if there are no further questions, we'd ask that the decision of the district court be vacated, and in light of the length of detention in this case, remanded with an order for an expeditious hearing to consider the arguments for immediate release and bond.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you to both counsel for being with us today.
Thank you, Your Honor.